You're listening to a podcast from 702.
You're with Clement Maniatella.
702.
And we are focusing now on the 16 days of activism against women and child abuse. And I really want you to contribute with your experiences, because we are discussing obstetric violence as a form of gender-based violence. And if you don't know what it is, it relates to the mistreatment of women during childbirth by health professionals. And this kind of violence can take many forms. You probably know of the verbal one, where women are scolded, right? They're humiliated, mocked, they're discriminated, right? The violence can also manifest itself through neglect. And I'm sure you know this, given the interviews we've done many times on air about how just government is spending so much money on cases of neglect, right? Sometimes it's just the lack of respect, even for your own rights. I know that when you're dealing with adolescents, women who are unmarried, sometimes women of low socioeconomic status, sometimes it's migrant women and those that are infected with HIV, those are the groups that are at a greater risk of experiencing abuse during childbirth. So I want us to have a broader discussion and also just raise public awareness about this phenomenon, right? Because it's not normal. We must validate the experiences of women who are survivors of obstetric violence and just counter that narrative that normalizes this kind of behavior and invalidates the trauma that these women have suffered. So we are going to bring some women who have experienced this kind of violence over this hour. I want us to also touch on the law and whether it protects women against this kind of abuse. And if you've experienced something like this, I'd like you to give me a call on 011-883-0702. If you want to send a WhatsApp voice note, you can do so on 072-702-1702. The SMS line is 31702. So let's say hi to the guests now. Professor Eddie Mhlanga is an obstetrician and gynecologist. Prof, thank you so much for joining this discussion. Good morning.
Good morning, and good morning to the listeners. Thanks.
And we've got Nonkululeko Mbuli as well, who is an advocacy and communications strategist at Embrace NGO. Nonkululeko, thank you for making time as well.
Hi, good morning, Clement, and good morning to all your listeners.
Yeah. And we also have Sheena Swema, who is an attorney and head of Gender Justice Program. Thank you so much for making time, Sheena. Welcome.
Thanks so much for having me, Clement.
Yeah, and Sheena is at the Center for Applied Legal Studies at VEDS. Let's start with the work that you've done, Nonkululeko. How bad is it really out there? And I think I mentioned earlier that we need to stop normalizing this kind of behavior. And it's going to take these conversations to raise this public awareness so that women who experienced something like this but haven't dealt with it because they didn't know that they had any other avenue to take it up can know that, look, you were not meant to be treated that way, and here are the options that you can take. So from the work that you've done as Embrace, how widespread is this problem?
All right, Clement, that's a very good question. So what we do know is that obstetric violence is a lot more pervasive than a lot of us had realized. So just to give you some background information on Embrace and sort of the work that we do. So Embrace is a social movement for mothers that values and celebrates motherhood, and particularly the critical role that mothers have to play socially, economically, and politically in South Africa. We advocate for the priorities of early motherhood, and one such priority is ensuring that mothers have equal access to compassionate and good quality health care both before, during, and after pregnancy. So very often our work brings us into contact with new mothers, including those who've experienced obstetric violence. So there's qualitative research obviously conducted over the years that suggests that such violence is pervasive and it's wide-ranging. And in spite of all of this, the issue of obstetric violence is missing in our discourse around gender-based violence. Mm. And this is obviously that we'd like to change. So over the duration of the 16 days of activism, we're really centering our focus on the stories of mothers and providing them the opportunity to have their perspectives and experiences elevated in an environment where mothers often don't feel free to speak openly about birth trauma and the abuse that they've suffered, which is largely ignored.
Professor Mhlanga, just please speak to us about what you see in your line of work, and just explain broadly when we're talking about obstetric violence. I mentioned the other forms that this violence can take, but from your line of work, what have you observed, and how do you define it with its different forms?
Thanks very much, Clarence. I hope I'm audible. For me, obstetric violence goes a lot beyond just at the time of giving birth, but it also goes beyond the issue of just women and girls. It starts off really at the time of pregnancy. So when there's disrespect, where there's questioning as to why you became pregnant, also the humiliation that, you know, how could you get pregnant when you cannot afford the children? But it also includes the harmful practices, not just the disrespect or the aggressive behavior, but the harmful, even though well-intentioned, the harmful treatment of women and girls, but also couples, because sometimes the couples, people come as couples or family, but then they get shunted away, and the woman and the girl are left alone to face this uncertain future. So during pregnancy, labor, and childbirth, but even after delivery. Now, the causes are quite wide. I think Sister Day has mentioned them, but the it goes from just the systemic factors, what the system itself does to a woman. The system itself dehumanizes the woman. So you become an object. So the obstetric part, obstetric basically meant you are assisting the woman. But obstetric now has become that I'm not assisting you. You do what I say you must do.
Mm.
What is comfortable for me as a health worker rather than what is comfortable or good for you as the pregnant mother or your unborn baby.
Mm.
So it has also become very, we like doing things now. And I think many of those who have had their first pregnancies, they know what is called episiotomy, which is kwandiselwa indlela, increasing the outlet by cutting. But many of them, the repair thereof is not good, and therefore they are subjected to lifelong pain and unpleasant sexual practices thereafter. So also educational, in that there is nothing written to the new nurses, midwives, and doctors. It's not emphasized that you respect the woman's preferences, but whilst doing the same, the good thing. Only human resources. I think as governments the world over, we have not paid enough attention that you need more people to support a woman who is in labor and who is delivering than in any other aspect, with the result that many of the people who are working in those circumstances cut corners, thinking that they are doing the best they can under the circumstances, while the system does not support or affirm them.
Yeah.
Then lastly, of course, the issue of the infrastructure. You come in, there are 10, 15 other women in the same ward because there's only one nurse who has to look after them. That also dehumanizes and that's what takes away the issue of privacy and individualized care.
Yeah. So that's what I
have seen.
Yeah.
But the last thing that also want to come in with is the issue of the increasing legal challenges that face the health system.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm going to get to the legal challenges shortly, Prof. I want us to get into that in the next, I think, 5 minutes or so. But Kshina, I wanted you to pick up from where Professor Mhlanga started there, around the emphasis even on the healthcare workers. Because what I'm picking up here is, and I'm asking you this because I know you do a lot of training with healthcare workers. I mean, we know about the rights that have to be respected. How much emphasis can be made? And do you feel there's a lot that's done to even just train and make health professionals aware of their expectations and how they're supposed to treat people during and after childbirth? And also add to that the issue of infrastructure, because it looks to me like it's not just the health professionals that are exerting this violence, but the system itself. If the infrastructure is not sufficient and it's not good for delivery and you don't have enough resources, so it's the system itself that also is not helping.
Yeah, so exactly when you speak of that, it's not a singular issue insofar as it's only the treatment. It is things like infrastructure. But with regard to training around healthcare practitioners, there really needs to be the abandonment of the kind of paternalism, which my colleagues have spoken about, which is really this view that I am correct because I am the healthcare practitioner and I will tell you, instead of the open and free communication between the patient and the practitioner. That really attempts to level the playing field, so to speak, insofar as you don't have like differentiated power relations. So people are allowed to speak and say, this is not good for me. This is not something I want. So it really is teaching healthcare practitioners, and I know it sounds like you would say it sounds airy-fairy, is really teaching healthcare practitioners about the principles of the Constitution, which really enshrines the rights to autonomy, to reproductive autonomy, to respect, to dignity. But it's really entrenching those as the kinds of values that healthcare practitioners should have, rather than this paternalism, this I am right and I'm not necessarily going to listen. It really has to be a conversation, and this training needs to be happening. With regards to the actual infrastructure and those types of issues, yes, of course that's going to be an issue, but we need to really approach this from a multi-pronged or multifaceted way in order to at least begin to change that. So that can't be the only excuse, is that there's not enough infrastructure or funds or things. Mm. Some of it is really systemic marriage to patriarchy, a systemic marriage to ideas that you don't need to listen to the needs of the patient. And I think that would be a good place to start, at least.
Yeah. Oh, I want to bring in the experiences of some of our listeners, and I want us to also touch on the psychological impact. I want us to touch on legislation and whether it's sufficient to protect women. Someone sent me a tweet here. This is Nongs, who says, Clement, in a public hospital in Durban 11 years ago, the nurses swore at me for asking for help. A medical student injected the epidural and he had no idea what he was doing. I was a guinea pig focused on to push a 5-kilogram baby. I had a panic attack when they did a C-section. So that's Knox there. Oh, Knox, I'm so sorry that you had to go through that. I've got Bongekile MCB on the line as well. Bongekile is in Boksburg for us. Bongekile, good morning. You're a mother. You are also an activist, the founder of Hopeville Foundation Support Group. What's your experience?
Good morning, Clement. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
I'm good, thank you. Just to mention my experience, it was not a pleasant one at all. The incident happened in 2005 at Baragwanath Hospital. There is a culprit that is known as Dr. Edridge, and unfortunately the department is doing everything in its power to protect him. And it's been a very strenuous and draining journey to try to access justice when people are deliberately blocking you. So it has not been an easy.
Ooh, we've lost Bongakile there. All right, we'll bring Bongakile back on the line. Bongakile was going to tell us about the experience that she had at the hands of some of these professionals. Nonkululeko, while we get Bongakile back on the line, just talk to us about the psychological impact of obstetric violence, not only on the mothers, but on their children as well.
Thank you, Clement. So we know that there are some very serious implications for both maternal health as well as early childhood development. So these violations, against sexual reproductive rights, particularly in the form of obstetric violence, result in trauma. Very often we see postpartum depression. There are physical damages to women, fetuses, and newborns, which at times do result in death and lifelong disabilities. But it's also important to nuance this conversation and to say, as varied as the different forms of obstetric violence, there are also various implications for the victims of obstetric violence. I think Prof. Eddie has already alluded to some of the other implications. So, for example, loss of fertility, loss of sexual pleasure. It really is an affront on the dignity of women and birthing persons. There are also issues of incontinence, pain, cosmetic damages, and all of these would have implications for maternal mental health, which already is an area that is not prioritized in the country's healthcare system. Another thing to also bring up is the fact that the country spends billions, particularly the healthcare, the Department of Health spends billions on litigation and settling cases around medical negligence.
Yeah.
And a lot of these are linked to, maternal and neonatal incidents, which is something that I think we also need to discuss. But yes, you are correct. There are lasting and far-reaching implications on both maternal health and the health of neonates.
Yeah, all right. I see we've got Bongakile back on the line now. Bongakile, you had started the story. Just explain, what happened to you?
In 2005, I gave birth to my daughter, Baragwanath, and I was sterilized without my concern, and there was no communication whatsoever with regards to me being sterilized. I only learned that I was sterilized 11 years later when I was trying to conceive.
Sure.
And I had not been in a hospital before or after that, so it was obvious that that happened when I gave birth. And I remember on the 20th of December 2016, I wrote an email to the former Minister of Health, that was Dr. Aaron Motsoaledi at that time.
Mm.
And since then, it's been from pillar to post. The evidence is there. It was gross negligence. But it seems like accessing justice is not something that will happen any soon, because there isn't that I haven't tried. I've been to all the relevant stakeholders, but it seems like I've been hitting walls, and it's very draining, as the lady I just mentioned earlier on, that it's very draining emotionally.
Mm.
It takes a really toll. I remember, I'll get calls from the support group. Someone is really having a meltdown, and it's difficult because I'm dealing with my own issues at the same time. I have to be a pillar on this side, and it really takes a toll emotionally.
Yeah.
I can't explain it. I don't think it's something that one can ever heal from.
Mm.
It's a lifetime scar. And the sad thing about this whole thing is how government is so insensitive. It's like they've removed a nail, something that will grow back. And unfortunately, mental health is not a priority.
Mm.
You're on your own. you're on your own. You have to survive on your own. Mm. And they have this tactic that it's so popular, of destroying evidence, of destroying files.
Mm.
Half of, if not, I think 80% of the ladies in my support group, they don't have their medical history. If they're not destroyed, they're edited.
Yeah. Ooh, bongekile. Ah, so sorry that that was your experience. And I really hope that there will be some resolution to your specific case. Professor Mhlanga, I mean, what I'm hearing from Bongekile is that some of the issues are that the medical records are edited, some of them go missing. How can women better prepare and ensure that they've got documentation that will be readily available when it comes to their medical records, should anything happen? What advice do you have for them?
Well, in the public sector, during the period of pregnancy, before one goes into labor to deliver, the chart or the document are kept by the woman or by the couple. And therefore, one can then, you know, take notes or even take pictures thereof, because those are your notes. However, once one gets into hospital, those notes then become the responsibility of the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not quite sure what one can do to make sure that one sees those records, because often even the patients themselves, they're not allowed to even look or question some of the things that we see in the notes. Whereas this is not outrightly outlawed, but the practice is that people will say to you, when did you become a doctor? That now you're looking at a doctor on the medical notes and so on. So it's inviting further humiliation and abuse. But legally, one can hold the hospital or the health department accountable for those those records, because they must keep those records for at least for at least 18 years. I think it's only 21 years.
Yeah.
Because
All right. Look, Sheena, I'll come back to you after the latest Eyewitness News headline, so you can also take us through legislation as it stands now and what needs to change. I want to read some of the messages here. Someone says, all right, here's on morning, Clement. This topic gets me emotional. I had a miscarriage in August in 2018. Mind you, I had to ask. They didn't even bother telling me what was wrong. Since this was my first pregnancy, I endured so much pain from the treatment that I received at the Far East Rand Hospital, and it left me broken. I left in my clothes that were blood-stained on the night of my admission. My uterus had an infection, so I had to go to theatre for DNC, but the nurses chose to ignore the doctor's instruction, and I had to endure the pain of my womb being cleaned without being sedated. Sure. I'm still recovering from the trauma and loss. I don't see myself having a baby in future. Yeah, what a heartbreaking story. That message is unsigned. And yeah, whoever sent it, I'm really sending you love. And I'm really hoping that you're going to find strength to talk about it. What a heartbreaking story. And this is what we talk about when we talk about obstetric violence. It comes in different forms. Like in this case, the listener says, I had to ask. They didn't even bother to tell me that I've miscarried. Oh, yeah. We'll continue this discussion after Eyewitness News headlines. 011-883-0702. If you want to share your stories with us, or if you've got questions, maybe you suffered this kind of violence and you want to know what options you have to take this up. I'll play your voice notes, your SMSs as well on 31702. It's 10:30.
702.
The Clement Maniatella Show.
Let's walk the talk.
It's 25 minutes before 11 o'clock. We are talking about obstetric violence as a form of gender-based violence. And yeah, heartbreaking stories that some of you are sharing with us. One message here on the SMS line says, "Hi, Clement, thanks for bringing up this issue. I'm even considering changing my OB because I don't think he will listen to me during delivery." I read another message just before we took the latest in Eyewitness News headlines that was just so heartbreaking. I'll go to your lines shortly on 011-883-0702. Sheena, I wanted you to take us through what the legislation says. Does it protect women against this kind of violence?
So, our constitution in theory does. We have, as we always say, fantastic rights. Rights to reproductive equality, safety from public and private violence, right to health care, and we even have the rights of the child. The problem is that this doesn't really translate into the current legislation that we have in place. We have things like the National Health Act, which covers informed consent and certain duties on health care practitioners. But what you said when you were coming back to the show is very important, is obstetric violence currently in South Africa is not considered as a form of gender-based violence, at least not in our courts or in our legal system.
Mm.
So we are not seeing any kind of real acknowledgement that this is a form of discrimination. That's kind of what gender-based violence is, discrimination against a certain vulnerable group because of gender. And if you look at our acts, they really are created 20, 30 years ago without the acknowledgement that this is a very specific form of discrimination and abusive treatment. So we really have very little recourse for individuals that are victims of this form of violence. I mean, we do have things like trying to get a misconduct hearing for healthcare practitioners. And then we have our delictual law, or as people will know, it's suing someone for money. Mm. But the real problem with that is that currently our delictual law really only properly acknowledges physical violations. So if you know you were forcefully sterilized without consent, that may be acknowledged, although only under a form really of physical violence against you. There's no real nuance in our law to acknowledge the kind of egregious acts or violations against the individual as an individual with dignity. So there really is very little adequate recourse for these individuals. Mm. It's an entire blinded area of our law.
What needs to change?
We definitely do need better policies around this, better training around this. Legislation-wise, I would say we need something that replicates an acknowledgement of violence like we have with other forms of violence. With our intimate partner violence, we have things like the Domestic Violence Act and sexual violence. We have our Sexual Offences Act. Why do we not have something that acknowledges obstetric violence as a public violence against a certain group of vulnerable women, especially vulnerable women, which is birthing women?
Yeah. I want to go to the lines now. 011-883-0702. We've got our listeners sharing their stories with us. Sanele, you are calling us from Joburg. Good morning.
Hi, Simon. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm good, and thank you so much for talking about this topic that has not really been talked about enough, and thank you for that. My name is Samela, and I'm a midwife. And because I'm a midwife, I have seen so many times how obstetric violence takes place and it unfolds. And people may think it's even only in the public sector, but it also happens in the private sector as well. I've seen how sometimes, most of the time actually, doctors will make decisions that the moms or the mom and dad doesn't agree to. And there's this relationship, I mean, there's this, it's like, I'm the parent, you're the child, you listen to what I say, I know what's best for you.
Sure.
And there isn't even a conversation to let the woman understand why certain things are being done. And some things are not even necessary to be done, but the healthcare provider has chosen that they are going to do this because they think it's the best. It's the best thing. So when I fell pregnant, I decided I am not going to see someone in. Like, I'm not going to give birth in a traditional hospital. Mm. That was my decision. I decided I've seen women not being treated with respect so many times that I decided I'm actually going to birth with a private midwife at a private midwifery obstetric unit, because I wanted a partnership with my healthcare provider. I wanted to be heard. I wanted to have a birth plan, knowing that when I get there, this is what's going to happen. This is what I'm going to use for pain. If things go south, this is what we're going to do. And when after I gave birth, I had a very beautiful birth with a private midwife, Sister Tony from Genesis. And what made me sad as a midwife after I gave birth is that, like, some women don't know that they have these options. And what made me even more sad was that I was exposed to that type of care because I could afford it. And it means that the woman who can afford it doesn't have these type of options.
Yes, yeah.
So, yeah, obstetric violence is real. And we would think that it happens in certain settings only, but it is vast. It happens in all sorts of settings.
Yeah, and just the psychological, you know, remnants of that kind of violence are just really disheartening. And the fact that there's no adequate legal recourse doesn't help much. Let's go to Cape Town now. Annie, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
To gather what your previous caller said, like, this happens in the private sector as well.
Mm.
I was 17 when I got pregnant with my son, and because I was inexperienced, my parents helped me. We found a female OB-GYN and thought it was the best option. Towards the end of my pregnancy, it became hostile, where I would go in every day, tell her something is wrong, and she would tell me, like, what do you know? You're 17. Mm. So turns out I had a tear in my placenta, had an infection, and my son is fine, but she didn't want to induce me because she wanted her off weekend.
Sure.
So I mean, she booked me a cesarean. Halfway through, the anesthesia wore off, and she had to do the last stitches live. A couple of years ago, I started with fertility treatment because I had got married, we wanted to start a family, and I knew I had secondary infertility.
Mm.
Didn't know why, though. And we had the funds to go to the top endocrinologist specialist, like the professor.
Mm.
He took me, literally looked me up and down and told me, listen, honey, there's nothing wrong with you. You are overweight. So after a year of treatment, to the point where I ended up in a wheelchair, they finally booked me in for a laparoscopy. Turns out I have endometriosis stage 4. There's no chance of being birth indicated. So if this happens, money is not a factor.
Mm.
It's the whole system of I know and you don't.
Yeah, sure. Wow.
But it happens every day, everywhere. Mm. I remember when I was in hospital with my son, there was a woman, like a young girl, but she was calling out for her mother. Like, she's in an incredible amount of pain. And the nurse literally slapped her and told her, you're upsetting the other mother. Shut up.
Yeah.
Why? But this is a private hospital. Like, we pay big money to be here. Why?
Yeah. And look, even if it wasn't even in public, you have a responsibility as a health professional. And you scolding someone, right, and humiliating them in full view of other people just because they are 17 or they are 18 or they were pregnant before they were married, whatever morals you subscribe to, that's just unacceptable. Yo, Annie, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. I'm so sorry about what you had to go through. I hope you and your son are okay. And by okay, I mean even psychologically, because they're just... yeah, psychological implications to this kind of violence. Nadia, you're calling us from the Johannesburg CBD. Hi.
Hi, Clement. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thanks. I will start at the end. It's been 13 years since I had this incident at the Far East End Hospital. And to this day, it still feels new. It still feels like yesterday. As you guys are talking about it right now, you guys are just bringing up all these emotions in me that I've had. The experience that I had there was just horrible. You know, I got there at around 6 o'clock, and around 10, my water broke. And as they were just checking the centimeters and how far along I am in my labor, this lady felt something. I don't know what it was that she felt, but she called the other nurses. They must all come, three or four of them lining in there. What are you feeling? What are you feeling? Nobody's telling me what was going on, you know. And as I was supposed to be prepared to go to theater, the doctor that on that day, specific day, decided that he was tired. He was not going to do the emergency C-section. Whoever was coming on the following shift will have to do it. But this traumatic experience, 13 years later, it is only now that I became comfortable to have another child. My child is now 6 months. My second born is now 6 months old, you know. But I had a fear of having another child because of that experience. Mm. So I waited up until I could afford to at least have private health care so that I can at least have a pleasant experience, which I've had a pleasant experience with my second born. But till this day, the thing has not moved. Mm. It's still there. It's still giving me chills even today. Mm. So it's very, very traumatic. I don't want to lie.
I can only imagine. Have you spoken to someone, Nadia? Like a therapist?
I've not spoken to anybody. In fact, I didn't even know that this thing would revoke such emotions in me. It was just one of those things that, you know what, everybody goes through these things, you know. I must just deal with it and move on, you know. Mm. But it's only now that you guys are talking about this thing that I realize that I've actually not dealt with this thing. It still hurts me even today.
Yeah, and thank you for sharing your story with us, Nadia. And I wish you the best. I think if you've got the resources, try and speak to someone. Because as you say, sometimes we think we've dealt with the trauma, but it's, you know, there are triggers and conversations and events that make you realize that there's a lot that you haven't really dealt with. That's Nadia in the Johannesburg CBD. Nonkululeko, as we wrap up with you guys, just talk about the importance of support, the support system, because you need that when you've experienced something so traumatic and so tragic.
Okay, so, you know, it was very important for us to name this phenomenon, but then also to describe it. I think we've all seen, you know, and heard stories of obstetric violence, you know, in the media or even from women very close to us. And I must say, since we've started the campaign on the 25th of November, we've had an overwhelming number of women like Nadia who've come to us with their stories, you know, having seen the content in social media, having gone through the checklist and discovering that actually the disrespect, neglect, verbal and physical abuse they suffered is a form of obstetric violence. So we are encouraging women who do have the resources to seek out professional assistance. We will also make resources available. So perhaps Nadia can leave her contact details with the producer and we can get in touch. But it is very important because this is a very often neglected, often not seen form of obstetric violence. You know, it is the pain and the trauma that women experience is dismissed very often and is minimized. Mm. And we do that to ourselves. We do that to our own pain and our own traumatic experience, but we also do that to the traumatic experiences of other women. So psychosocial support is really integral to ensuring that women are able to not only move on from that traumatic experience, you know, come to terms, but then also become advocates for other women who might have experienced, you know, obstetric violence. So we are hosting a Facebook Live conversation tonight, and we really would encourage, you know, women who have experienced obstetric violence, or even, you know, people who haven't, who are interested in the subject, to tune in. There's power in sharing our stories.
Absolutely.
And I think, this is an event that you shouldn't miss.
Yeah. So how if people want to check out that coverage, how do they go about it? Is it on Facebook?
It is on Facebook.
Should they go to Embrace?
Visit Embrace's Facebook page. All the details are on there. So it starts at 7:30. Right. We'll have some expert voices, but more importantly, centering the experiences and perspectives of women who have been victims.
And sharing the stories, because that also goes a long way, knowing that there are other people that have gone through something similar. Prof, just talk to us about the importance of collaborations in combating this kind of violence.
Hello.
Yes, Prof Mhlanga. I wanted you to wrap up with just the importance of collaborations in dealing with this kind of violence.
Yeah, okay. I think I would address the prevention part, and that we need role models. There are many who are doing the right thing there in the health service. So please continue doing it. However, we need more of them to be able to greet, to be able to explain, to be able to ask for permission from the person that you are working with.
Mm-hmm.
We must remember we can learn from the patient. So talk to them and then encouraging those who are practicing. Now, there are various non-governmental organizations, but the people who are coming in to ask for help, those are our greatest allies, and those are the ones that we are called to help protect, to assist them in enjoying pregnancy and enjoying childbirth. It is painful, but with support, that pain is better.
Yeah, Professor Mhlanga, thank you. And Sheena, your last words?
I will probably say what I say to many of our clients and birthing people that have approached us. Because this isn't a prevalent or not acknowledged around the country and in government, is you have to listen to that voice inside. And if you feel there was something wrong, there probably was. If you feel like someone treated you in a way that made you feel small, made you feel indignified, made you feel worthless, if they violated you in some way, if a healthcare practitioner didn't listen to you and you feel that was wrong, you feel in fact that does not sit well with me, it probably was.
Yeah.
It probably was an example of obstetric violence.
Yeah.
So you're not alone, and there are places like Embrace to reach out to. You can reach out to CULC, but really, it's not normal, and we can't have it be normal.
Absolutely. Sheena Swema, Professor Eddie Mhlanga, and Nonkululeko Mbuli, thank you so much, guys, for helping us and guiding us through this discussion.
You're with Clement Maniatella.
7:02.
6 minutes before 11 o'clock. Megan, you calling us from Johannesburg. Good morning.
Morning, Clement. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
What's been your experience?
So I get birthed in a private hospital in Johannesburg. And, you know, when you pay for private healthcare, you expect that you'll get a far better experience.
Yeah.
And largely what I experienced was neglect in the hospital. So I was left for very long hours. So I arrived at the hospital in the evening at about 10 o'clock. And initially there was security wouldn't let us in. I was in labor and my husband had to say to them, you know, our gynae had said to us, go to the labor ward and they'll do the COVID test in the labor ward. And my husband is in labor. I mean, my wife's in labor. You need to let us go. And we were left to walk through the hospital, find our own way. Obviously with COVID. So this was in 2020. We didn't have any antenatal classes or hospital visits beforehand. So found our way. When I arrived, they had questioned me on when my C-section was booked. I'd said, I'm not having a C-section. It's natural delivery. I was checked, and then I was essentially left overnight and not checked again. I did tell them that my baby had the cord around her neck and that had been picked up by my gynae. My gynae was unfortunately on leave at the time. And then at about 5 in the morning, I buzzed for the nurses as I'd started to bleed. And they essentially rolled their eyes at me. The nurse rolled her eyes at me and said, I'll bring you a pad. And I said to her, but is something wrong? This is my first baby. I don't know what's happening. I don't know what this means.
Yeah.
I'm bleeding a lot. And she said to me, when a machine's available, she'll come check on me. So it was about an hour and a half later that they checked again. And just never gave us any information on, what was happening. Was my baby safe? Was everything fine? Eventually, when the on-call doctor came through, he actually was making small talk with the forceps and snapping them and saying to me, you need to push one, I'm going to have to use these forceps. Sure. And so both my husband and I were, wide-eyed. I was vomiting during labor. I wasn't offered any pain medication. One of the other nurses asked for water for me, and the night nurse had said she didn't want water. Mm. Eventually I was given an episiotomy, and I had quite a lot of, physical trauma from not knowing how to push. I was given the episiotomy with just a local anesthetic that did not take, and I told the doctors that I could feel everything. And I could feel it when they were stitching me up. I could feel everything the local didn't take at all. And then after birth, in the ward, I was left on my own. I had to call for medication, for pain medication, which often didn't arrive. My husband and I really had a bad taste in our mouth.
Yeah. Oh, Megan, sure. I'm so sorry you have to go through that. Yeah, some of these stories are so distressing, really tragic. We're out of time, but I really appreciate you sharing that with us, Megan in Johannesburg.